history, exploring the past to understand the future. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RUWithSonali.
Rising Up with Sonali is hosted, written, and executive produced by Sonali Kohatkar. Anna Buss is the producer, technical director, and web and social media supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy Award-winning band Kitsap. Like us on facebook.com/RUWithSonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on twitter.com/RUWithSonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Tune in to KBOO tonight at 8 o'clock for Squirrel Snow, the one show where we broadcast galactic awareness and animal awareness, where sometimes we have fascinating conversations with experts, authors, activists in the fields of animal awareness and galactic awareness. And a lot of the time we play amazing music that could effectively raise your frequency of consciousness. Yes, that is Squirrel Snow, tonight at 8 o'clock here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Listening to KBOO Community Radio, and we're in the middle of our end of year drive. Help us meet our $70,000 fundraising goal by going to kboo.fm/give to make a contribution today. KBOO's independent programming is only possible with your support. Give now at kboo.fm/give. You can also text KBOO by entering 44321 and text the word KBOO. That's KBOO. Our members continue to support community radio every time they give.
KBOO. Welcome to another episode of Civic Cypher. I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. You are listening to Civic Cypher.
Yes, indeed. A lot to stick around for today. You should be listening to this episode sometime around Christmas. And I wish that we had better gifts for you, but there's been a lot of things going on in the news that we've had to get to. And today is just our day. And so we will do just that. So stick around again. Today, we're going to be talking about the death of Ronald Green. He was the 49-year-old black man who died after being violently arrested over 3 years ago. And we never got a chance to see the footage of his arrest. And so we're going to discuss that today. So prepare yourself. That's some heavy stuff. And we're also going to talk about a video that went viral about a Winston-Salem University student who was arrested after having an argument with her teacher in a classroom. And what people are saying is that she didn't apologize to her white professor after the professor insisted. And you know, the police were weaponized and they came into the classroom and arrested the black woman who was, you know, standing up for herself or whatever the case is. So we're going to get into that as well. We're also going to talk about the history of Vicks VapoRub for our Way Black History Fact, something I didn't know myself. So we're going to spend a little time talking about Lunsford Richardson and an invention that might be in use in your household this holiday season if you are dealing with any sick folks. All that and so much more to stick around for on today's episode. So yeah, we're really excited to revert to type and get back to it. But first and foremost, we like to start off with some Ebony Excellence, provided the Q is on board.
Shall we?
We shall. So today's Ebony Excellence is brought to you by Hip Hop Weekly Media. And today we're going to highlight a lady named Suzanne Schenck. She's the president and CEO of Siebert Williams Shank & Co., SWS, the nation's largest woman and minority-owned non-bank financial firm. And she has been inducted into the Bond Buyer Hall of Fame. According to the SWS, the Bond Buyer Hall of Fame recognizes individuals who have left an innovative legacy on the business of municipal finance and the people and places it represents. Quote, these individuals are standard bearers, innovators, trendsetters, people who have had an indelible impact on the industry they've dedicated their professional lives to, said Michael Scarcilli, editor-in-chief of The Bond Buyer, in a news release. There's another quote. Quote, I have had the great fortune to have accomplished trailblazing partners as well as hardworking, dedicated employees who have made my journey possible. I am truly honored for this induction, alongside some remarkable industry peers, into the inaugural Bond Buyer Hall of Fame class, Shank said in a news release. And I think it goes without saying that she is a Black woman. And as you know, we love a little bit of Black girl magic around here.
We have a lot of Black girl magic around here.
Oh yeah. And we will divert our resources to highlighting Black girl magic whenever we can. So this week's Ebony Excellence, again, Suzanne Shank. And you know, this is also something that you don't hear of a lot. A lot of times you don't hear of Black women receiving accolades in the business world. And so this one felt a little special, and you know, far be it from us to look past that. So once again, shout out to Suzanne Shank, president and CEO of Siebert Williams Shank & Co. Now, Ronald Green. Just so you know, today's source material comes from BINnews.com. So I'll first, before we do some reading, I recognize you may not have seen all the videos that we talk about on the show. We go back and forth on whether or not we should play the audio or how we should share it, because we recognize that there is Black trauma in these videos, and we don't want you to be desensitized to it. And this is why we often put ourselves in the critical process, you know, in the middle there, so that, you know, it gets to us and then we explain it to you if you haven't seen it. Unlike, you know, the George Floyd video, this one hasn't been globally made famous. This is kind of like one of the normal ones, which sounds awful, but this one stood out because, you know, obviously there's way more of these than we can cover on this show, but this one felt like a combination of a lot of different stories we've had to cover on the show in recent months. And as a result of that, it was particularly disturbing. It had all of the makings of a, well, why didn't they just do this? Right? If this was a different person, you can totally see them behaving differently, the police behaving differently. If he looked different, if he was a different age, if he was, you know, whatever. So just like most of the videos that we talk about, most of the videos you've seen, you know, we talk about a police shooting video. You already know the story. For those not familiar with the Ronald Green one, it plays just like a normal story. Black man gets pulled over. He pulled out of his car. He's afraid. So that might have meant that he was not trying to pull over in the first place, you know. In this case, it took place in Louisiana, which, you know, Q and I have shared the story a couple times on the show where we've got pulled over in Mississippi, just outside of Louisiana, once upon a time. So we know what that's like to be in a place like that at night and being pursued by police. That is not a, no matter what you do, your life is on the line. You could pull over or you could try to flee. Either way, you are afraid. And this is something that we understand. And so these stories, we try to breathe life into them for folks that may not fully appreciate what's going on in that. Of course, as you know, these stories tend to play out like this. You know, they pull him out of his car, beat him up, tase him a bunch of times, arrest him. This one, he wasn't shot, but he died just the same. You know,
he was beat to death. I don't know yeah. that's better.
Yeah, but normally, you know, people tend to associate police shootings mm-hmm. and black people. And once upon a time, it was called police brutality in the early and mid 90s surrounding, you know, the Rodney King case. Police brutality, what was highlighted. We knew about police killings and police shootings, but those often didn't get filmed the way that, you know, fights last, you know, a couple of minutes. If you know, there's four or five cops beating a dude up, you know, you can get that on video a little easier. But nowadays, with everybody having cell phones, the most sensationalized version of that type of story is a police shooting. And so that has kind of rose to prominence. But, you know, in the case of George Floyd, that was not a police shooting. That was just police, what we would have called police brutality. And, you know, this is very similar. So there's another thing here, too. And this is personal. This is why I really wanted to talk about this, because this one I wanted to talk about for this week. It's weird to say it, but there's a guy who's named Rashard Brooks who died. He lost his life at the hands of the police. And I saw the video of his last moments before we started doing Civic Cypher. And that hit me in a way that was different from George Floyd even. Because with George Floyd, you saw a man who was alive get the life pressed from his body. And it's very sad. It's incredibly sad. It's heartbreaking. But I did not know, I was not able to get a sense of who he was, his temperament, his demeanor in the video that I saw. I just saw that he was alive and he was getting pressed into the cement. With Rashard Brooks in that video, I saw him communicating with the police. In brief, he had pulled over into a parking lot. It might have been a Wendy's or a McDonald's in Atlanta, I believe. And police pull up to the car and, hey, man, what are you doing? I think he might have been sleeping. I haven't seen the video in some time. He gets out of the car, super cooperative. You know, obviously he had been celebrating. I think it was a birthday party for his kid or something. And he was just hanging out there. He wasn't driving. He wasn't doing anything. And he's cooperating with the police, right? Not in his right frame of mind. He's obviously visibly inebriated, but not harming anybody, not hurting anybody. He's just sitting there in the car. And of course, again, the police come, ask him to step out of the car, start talking to him. And the way the officers are interacting with him, I would think that, okay, this guy's not hurting anybody. He's in his car. Hey, you're going to have to give us the keys or, you know, whatever. Have a good night, you know, get a ride home, something like that. Instead, the police say, all right, we're going to have to place you under arrest. And in his mind, I'm guessing, because he's not alive to tell us his version of the story, because he died in this moment that I'm describing to you. But in his mind, I'm sure that confused him and freaked him out.
It's very likely he didn't think he should be arrested.
Of course not. I didn't think so.
And he didn't want to go to jail.
Right. That's a much bigger predicament to come back from. But on top of that, it's if for folks that don't know, interacting with the police is scary. There are some people, oftentimes they don't have as much melanin as someone like me, who love talking to the police. Hi, how you doing, officer? Great day, nice weather. And there's other people who would rather just have nothing to do with the police whatsoever, right? You know, this is why my insurance on my car is up to date. My tags are right, you know what I'm saying? Like everything, because I do not want to even have to interact with these people because of the potential for that type of thing to get away from you, right? Anyway, so back to Rashard Brooks, and then we'll focus on Ronald Green. But I'm telling you why this story stood out to me. So Rashard, just stumbling drunk, turns around and starts trying to run away. Doesn't have his footing. He's not moving very quickly. And these are police officers, so they're supposed to stay in shape, you know, that sort of thing. And rather than pursue him, grab him, tackle him, you know, if they insisted on making an arrest, whatever, they shot him in the back and he died in a parking lot. And to me, that felt incredibly unfair. Again, this ready, fire, aim sort of approach that we've talked about on the show that we often associated with police behavior. So when I saw that, that moved me even more than the George Floyd video, because I got a chance to see myself. This man is harmless. He's not drunk driving. He was asleep. He caught him, said, "Hey man, you know what? I probably should just sleep it off." The police come, stress him out, decide they're going to arrest him. He turns, he clearly can't run away. Like, imagine like a child trying to run from you. You're like, okay, now I got to go get this kid. You know, they don't have the form necessary.
The muscular dexterity.
There you go. Thanks, Q. It just doesn't exist. And you know that immediately when you see him turn and run. And, you know, now this man is dead. And I have to imagine, Q doesn't like when I do this, but I think it's just a great thought experiment for you to have listening to us today. I have to imagine, just change his skin, make him white. He could be the same age, same everything. He turns and runs. What do? Maybe they tase him. Maybe they run after him and actually do their job. Catch him, handcuff him, take him to jail. If they insist on doing that,
we know for certain that they don't murder him.
Right.
We know that for certain.
Right. But because a lot of people have difficulty seeing things when they go from black to white, what I like to do is often impose the theoretical philosophy behind our judicial system, which is, you know, justice is blind. It is no respecter of persons, right? And that's just not true, because let's try it one more layer to it. Let's make this Rashard Brooks person, let's make him a 22-year-old blonde-haired, blue-eyed white female. Does she die? And that might be easier for you to tell yourself, no, of course she doesn't die. Police are not going to be there. Just go catch her and handcuff her and throw her in the car. Spend the night in jail. She goes on, lives the rest of her life, pays a fine. That's it. So that's, again, what told me. Well, I already knew that there was a problem. So I guess this is what moved me in a way where I felt like, there's no turning back for me. Because at the time when George Floyd stuff happened, I was protesting. I was doing all that sort of stuff. It wasn't until the Rashard Brooks thing where I was like, this needs to happen. There's no going back. This has to happen. And here we are. Now, back to Ronald Green. Let me read a little bit about his story. Let's start at the beginning. Five Louisiana officers have been charged in the case of Ronald Green, a 49-year-old black man who died by being violently arrested over 3 years ago. Again, I want to mention that it took them that long to release the tape. It was the Associated Press, AP, that actually found clips of the arrest and leaked it online. And that's what forced the hand of the police department to.
How did they say he died 3 years ago?
They said that he died after crashing into a tree. So we'll get there. All right, let me keep reading. According to CBS News, officers were charged with state crimes ranging from negligent homicide to malfeasance. The charges come after video showed white state troopers beating, stunning, and dragging Green as he yelled, "I'm scared," during an arrest in 2019. On May 10th of that year, troopers pursued Green after he failed to stop for a traffic violation. I want to take a moment here, if I may. Again, if you're listening and you hear that, failed to stop for a traffic violation, or if you know people in your world who would say to you, well, you know, he should have stopped when they turned the lights on. Everybody knows the rules. The police shine the lights, you pull over. I would like to remind you that there is a thing called fight or flight. It exists in any creature with a nervous system. any mammal, anything that has a brain that can move. Brain is what you have if you need to move. Any creature with a brain only has it so they can move. Your fight or flight response, which is built into your nervous system, is the highest function of all. It supersedes every other biological function. If you feel that you have the capacity to reason and make sense of a situation, and someone introduces a life and death element to that situation, everything goes out the window and you're only focused on surviving. That's it. Okay. So if we can agree on that, if you're listening to me, then I'm assuming you're a human being. If we can agree on that, then we can also agree, perhaps, that Black people, whether or not you feel it's valid or not, Black people in mass, if we're painting with broad strokes, feel unfairly targeted and treated by the police in this country. Okay. Might not be you. You might not think it's valid, but you can acknowledge that if we're painting with broad strokes, Black people overwhelmingly feel this way and have felt this way since the beginning of policing. Okay. So if we can get that far, then we examine the whys, because oftentimes when Black people interact with police, the outcomes are much worse. When Black people interact with the criminal justice system, the outcomes are much worse overall. I'm not even quoting any statistics because I know that you know that I'm telling the truth.
Yeah, there's no need to.
Sure. So all of this stuff is problematic. If the criminal justice system treated Black people fairly, there would probably have been no reason for Rashard Brooks sleeping in his car in the parking lot when he found out that he was arrested to even turn and attempt to run away. Because he would think the same way a 22-year-old blonde-haired, blue-eyed white woman would think, okay, whatever, I'm going to jail, I'll be out tomorrow. No big deal. I didn't really do anything. Thank you. So, for those people who say he should have just pulled over, I think you're ignoring the base limbic biological functions that instinctively kick in. Now, that's not to say that some of us don't pull over, or, you know, some of us don't play the game, but every one of us recognizes the decisions that we're making could be life and death. And how we choose to move is, again, the result of a higher function, something that it is stronger than us in those moments. This is my belief, okay? Now, if those things are true and the police get behind you and you're in Louisiana and it's night, you got some decisions to make.
Yeah, when I might die on this traffic stop,
yeah,
it's not as easy as just pull over.
Right. It could be, listen, I'm going to pull over where there's more light. We've seen that. It could be, look, man, I'm not going to die here tonight. I'm going to go home. I'm going to go to a church. I'm going to go somewhere where I'm a little bit more safe. Or it could simply be, I'm afraid I'm going to try to flee. Because again, it's fight or flight. With that said, on May 10th of that year, troopers pursued Green after he failed to stop for a traffic violation. All right, moving on. Police initially told Green's family that he died after crashing into a tree at the end of that pursuit along a rural roadside in Monroe. An official report by the Union Parish coroner described the motorist's death as a vehicle accident and failed to include his confrontation with police. For over 2 years, officials declined to release body camera footage of the incident. It wasn't until the AP unearthed the video in May 2021 that officers were seen repeatedly stunning and punching Green as he appeared to surrender and plead, "I'm your brother. I'm scared. I'd like to add, he said, "I was scared."
So he's trying to get them to understand why he didn't stop immediately.
Right. He did say that as well.
I was afraid.
That might be what he said. At another point in the video, a state trooper dragged Green by his ankle shackles. He was dragged on his face. So imagine
he's handcuffed
and leg
laying
cuffed
on his belly and cuffed at the ankles.
Right.
The officer grabbed the cuffs around his ankles and drug him.
Yeah, on his face.
It's after having already beat him up and tased him multiple times.
Yeah, he was bleeding and it's gruesome. I do not recommend it because, again, I don't want you to become desensitized to Black trauma. We do our best on this show, Q and I, to not become desensitized to Black trauma. But that's what happened. Blood everywhere. The officers are saying, oh, he gave me AIDS because he got blood on his hand after he beat him bloody.
Yeah, like he just decided to bleed that day.
Sure. The 49-year-old Black man was left face down in the dirt for over 9 minutes before he eventually went limp. Police officers across the country are trained that once you are handcuffed, once a person is handcuffed, you can't leave them on their belly because they could suffocate under the weight of their own body, right? So you roll them to the side or you set them up in their handcuffs, right?
If you notice on the video, he tried to roll on his own side. The officer placed his foot on his backside and pushed him back onto his stomach.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, no, you're not getting up.
Mm.
Put his foot there, pressed him back down, and held him there to make sure he stayed in that position. Once again, this is long after he's been cuffed, tased multiple times, cuffed at the ankles and the hands. There's no longer a struggle.
So what we see is bad decision making at every step of the way. Right. And at the end of it, they lied, said it was because he crashed into a tree, and they got the coroner to lie with them. And we've done many episodes talking about how police rewrite the truth so that they don't appear as criminal as they often are in these stories. And then they withheld the evidence toward that end until, was it May 2021? And then
how many years later?
I think it was 2 years after the incident. And then it took a whole another year for this to get any traction. And so this is why we're talking about it today. So our job is to bring it to your attention. Our job is to help you make sense of it and then help you to tell your stories in your world. So hopefully we've done just that.
And now, proper propaganda. Watch it. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders.
If you're just tuning in to Civic Cypher, I am your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. You are now tuned in to Civic Cypher.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to need you to stick around a little bit more because we got a little bit more for you. We are going to be spending some time talking about the Winston-Salem State University student who was arrested in a viral video after refusing to apologize to her professor. Yeah, that is a lot. And we're also going to talk about Vicks VapoRub. For our Way Black History Fact, some stuff I didn't know. You know, Black people are some innovators, man. We are, and I when I found that out, I thought it was super cool, and I'm really excited to share it with you. But first and foremost, let's discuss BABA Baba, how to become a better ally here on Civic Cypher. So today's Baba, let's send you over to a place we haven't recommended before. The UNCF, that stands for the United Negro College Fund.
Talk to him.
And it's exactly like what it sounds like for those who didn't grow up hearing the mind is a terrible thing to waste in TV commercials. The United Negro College Fund is just that. Sounds a little old school, but it's because it's been around for a long time. And they're always raising money. So I pulled something from uncf.org. This, by the way, is sponsored by Major Threads for high quality menswear. Check out majorthreads.com. And again, this comes from uncf.org. So it says, happy holidays. Thank you for your support of UNCF, its students and colleges this past year. Your tax-deductible gifts have helped us support over 60,000 students at our HBCUs and over 1,000 other colleges across the nation. Your gifts help our talented and deserving students change the trajectory of their lives and help them to become the professionals our nation needs. Over 70% of them are Pell Grant eligible. They are from households with serious financial need, and many are from communities and school systems that have been traditionally underserved. They need our help to get to and through college, and we need yours. Please give generously. So we've talked about Urban League. We've talked about NAACP. We've talked about, you know, we support a lot of orgs, a lot of Black orgs, a lot of social justice campaigns. And I can't believe it's taken us over 2 years to mention the United Negro College Fund. But here we are today. If you feel so inclined to make a donation, of course, you can always donate to Civic Cypher. Our link is at civiccypher.com. But today's Baba, once again, if you would like to become a better ally, consider the UNCF, the United Negro College Fund, at uncf.org. Now, the angry Black woman. That feels very unfair.
That's a good place to start.
Yeah.
Unfair is a good place to start. It is a gross characterization used to legitimize unfair treatment, used to legitimize subjugation, used to legitimize hyper-marginalization, whatever you want to categorize it as. Right, the othering of people. Let's paint a picture, right? Uncivilized, unsmart, uneducated, unable to properly communicate so that I can justify the disrespect that will follow me identifying her as angry Black woman. But go on.
No, well said. I love that. Yeah. There's a lot going on here. Now, I need to say this. This is a historically Black college, right? That's what HBCU stands for, historically Black college and university, Winston-Salem University. The teacher is, or it looks visibly Caucasian, white, right? And so I want to be as fair as I can be. Right. So if you are a white teacher at a historically Black college and university, there's already some things that I might give you the benefit of the doubt for. I might not think that you harbor as much in the way of traditional racism as a person who might be employed at a non-HBCU campus. Right. So in other words, if you're white, but you work at an HBCU, you might kind of know what's up, right? But we've talked about this on the show before. It is possible for Black people to be white supremacists. So it's possible for anybody short of that to at least weaponize the system against Black people in a way that causes harm of a particular variety to that group, to our group, to Black women. Okay? So, of course, I'm going to go through and read everything to you, but in short, what we have is a student and a teacher have a disagreement. Student is Black, teacher is white. The teacher insists that the student apologize. The student insists that the teacher apologize. The teacher asks the student to leave or apologize, and the student refuses to leave and refuses to apologize and is awaiting her apology. There's a back and forth. Someone calls the police. I don't even believe it was that teacher in particular, but someone else called the police. Please show up. And arrest the student. And that's when the video picks up. So if you have seen this video, this is the part that you're seeing. when the student is arrested and you can see her face, you start to realize this is not right. It's that same feeling that you get in your stomach when you see the police show up and arrest even little kids. And we've talked about videos where the police come to elementary schools and arrest 7-year-olds. You know what I mean? We've talked about how SROs, student resource officers, help fortify the school to prison pipeline, because it's simply a matter of, it becomes criminal rather than, you know, just being disciplinary, right? Because we recognize that some students, you know, their rules and, you know, there has to be some structure. There has to be adherence to a set of rules and standards. There has to be hierarchy and respect and so forth in order for things to function. And if you go against that, then you set a precedent that other people could follow. You lose your authority and your capacity to teach. And then what are you really doing at the end of the day? But the overreach when it involves police who are tasked with dealing with criminal activity, and often have sort of a bully mentality, God complex, that sort of thing, you know? And even if the individual officers don't, that element often brings that with it, right? You start to see like, I don't really love how this looks. I don't love this. This shouldn't be happening. There's got to be a better way to deal with this stuff when it happens.
And ironically, Ramses, she doesn't just look, because nobody looks happy being arrested, right? She doesn't just look unhappy.
Yeah, it's different.
And upset. She looks confused.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you at least understand when you've just committed a crime.
Like, yeah.
Okay,
this,
now I'm
this
being
sucks,
arrested.
But yeah.
This young lady has no idea why she's being handcuffed, especially in light of the other person involved, the other perpetrator of the non-crime that happened, being the one instructing the police.
Right.
If you and I get into an argument and the cops show up, you shouldn't just be able to tell them, arrest this man.
And the police listen, right.
Except if this man looks like Ramses and I am less melanated, that outcome might actually play out that way.
Yeah. Arrest him. He did this to me. Well, now I'm sitting in handcuffs on the side of the road.
You know, you and I watched the video. Remember, there was two children fighting in a mall.
Oh yeah, and then
the
they
cops
got,
show up
and they tackle
the, one of the. They sit the white kid down, like wait here, and then they tackle and arrest the black kid.
One, yeah,
and he gets to watch as a bystander or an audience. These kids were doing this, whatever
the same thing. They
whatever
were
both, was happening.
They were
both perpetrators of it.
Yeah.
Right, but by nature of just appearance, the black kid gets to be the criminal here.
I want
the criminal element, if you will.
I want to say something and speak to that story. If I remember correctly, that white child did actually speak out against that behavior. I thought that was very important that he did that. And I his name is not in front of me right now, of course, but it is possible to call out racism even if it benefits you. And he did that in that moment. Now, let's get you through this story here. So again, my source material is BINnews.com. So be sure to check that out. I've got a lot of great stories up there for you. Winston-Salem University officials are speaking out after video showed the classroom arrest of a student who said she was detained for not apologizing to a white professor. Haley Gingles, I believe it is, a spokesperson for the HBCU, told CNN that the now viral incident unfolded after, quote, what appears to be a disagreement over a class assignment, unquote, between a WSSU student identified as Layla Marie on social media and a professor believed to be Dr. Cynthia Villagomez. The university did not confirm their identities. In a video widely circulated online, two police officers appear to handcuff the student as she repeatedly yells, "I hate you," at her professor.
Mm-hmm.
Mental health, anyone? Overwhelmed? You know, these are students. The world is crumbling around them.
Angry that my teacher is weaponizing the police against me.
Oh, yeah. And then what do you do? All right. You're the worst teacher ever. You get me taken out in handcuffs because I won't apologize, the student says, per the video. Because I won't apologize, you started yelling at me. You tried to embarrass me about my paper. Following the incident, Marie took to Instagram to detail the events leading up to the arrest. The WSSU student said Villa Gomez informed her that a group assignment she completed was done incorrectly and needed revising just 6 hours before she was set to present it in front of the class. Marie refused to revise the project in the short time frame. She said on Instagram, she came to class frustrated but ready to present the project as is. Villa Gomez said presenting the unrevised project would greatly impact her grade, which prompted a shouting match between the two, according to Marie. The university's chancellor, Elwood Robinson, released a letter addressing the arrest. Quote, we understand that the weaponization of police is a prevalent problem in our community. However, that is not what happened in this incident, Robinson wrote. We know the situation has caused a great deal of trauma to those involved and our campus community at large, but please know that every available resource is being extended to bring a resolution. Goes on. We know you want immediate answers, he continued in the letter. However, the speed of our processes does not match the speed of social media. Ultimately, we are committed to ensuring due diligence and fairness. We do ask for your patience, as we must take the necessary time to ensure the safety of everyone involved. Disciplinary actions against the student, quote, will be under review at a later time, unquote, the WSSU spokesperson said. As for the professor, Gingles said she is very emotional and shaken by all this. There have been several threats to her safety, which of course are cause for alarm. Now, I know that we live in a world that does not care to heed the sensitivities of really anyone, but in particular marginalized peoples. Individuals might be able to heed those sensitivities, you know. And I've seen in recent years movements toward understanding, acknowledging, accounting for, and even celebrating our individualities. Our individual individualities. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, but I've seen the Me Too movement and I've seen the world move a little bit closer to being kinder to our sisters, our wives, our daughters, et cetera. Obviously the Black Lives Matter movement, where we were protesting for police reform. You know, in my mind, that started with actually it started with Trayvon Martin and it picked up steam with Colin Kaepernick. And then it went fully global upon the death of George Floyd. So we've seen the world understand that there is a little bit more than just there may be some consequences. You know, there is going to be people that'll stand up, right? But for the most part, the world does not really care about our individual issues, our individual sensitivities. And I don't think anybody on planet Earth gets ignored or overlooked more than Black women. With that said, that in and of itself could create lots of things that we might need to be sensitive to, right? No matter what you say, a Black woman is your mom at some point in your history. You would not be here if it was not for her. That is as close to God as you will ever be on this earth, in this realm. Make sure I say that right. So not sending everybody to hell. But you hopefully you understand what I'm saying here. And, you know, as a result, it is possible for there to be disagreements. It is possible for, you know, Black women to be fed up, have their Rosa Parks moment, have the, you know what, I'm just not, this is it. Take me to jail. Not saying that that's what the student said, but standing your ground, enough is enough. That is something that we see a lot of times, Black women in particular, they have to get to that point. And if you're not sensitive to all the other pressures that go into being a Black woman, then you might look at this just like another angry Black woman, not fully appreciating what it means to live in that skin, to live in that body, to live in a world that does not appreciate what it is that that person has to offer fully, right? Oftentimes, what it is that person has to offer is stolen from her, used by other groups, she's not credited for it. And in fact, she's punished for it when it is her most authentic self.
And this starts when our Black women are very young. You know what I mean? They're from the creativity they create on social media as children. You know, the most popular dances and TikTok crazes start with young Black queens, right? Someone less melanated and more popular makes it famous and gets all the credit. There's no shout out, there's no tag, there's no nothing. You know, these young Black creators, these young Black women turning these platforms into billion-dollar platforms just off of their innate ingenuity, style, and talent. Having those things, as you said, stolen and taken away. And in cases where not only are things stolen and taken away and credit given somewhere else, but I bring up children because they'll get in trouble for things that other kids will get celebrated for.
Isn't that crazy? It's listen, man, go to Fanbase, get the app. Okay, Fanbase. If you really want to push back against that phenomenon that happens on social media, get Fanbase on your phone and follow Civic Cypher. We'll be your friend. But yeah. So what do you do in a situation like this? I think it starts with recognizing that police in your world, that's not the same as police in our world. The police may be the good guys in your story. And in our story, oftentimes, at best, they are the people that we simply need to avoid. At best, oftentimes. I don't know that there are many Black people that look at police like, oh my God, let me go run. Like, if you're a firefighter, yeah, man, firefighters are cool. You know what I mean? Like, they put out fires, or, you know, that sort of thing. Police is like, you have a gun. You know, this is, you stay ready to end someone's life. That energy is not. And then often enough, the people, or rather disproportionately and unfairly, the people often look like me. So using the police to deal with situations that don't require police presence is something that we should be mindful of. We should be mindful that Black women are not a threat in a way that requires a criminal response. Who's to say what the right thing is, but I can definitely tell you what the wrong thing is, right? So we're all figuring out how to get through life together, right? And we're all figuring out day to day, using our own creativity, what are the best practices for ourselves and for each other as brothers and sisters. But I can say that calling the police on Black women for anything short of legitimate criminal activity is a flagrant overreach, and the amount of scarring that that has, not just on that woman, but on a classroom full of women that saw it, and all of us that saw it too.
Perpetual trauma, and it's a disregard for their physical and mental well-being. Mm-hmm. We see the outcomes.
Yeah.
Right. I think one of the students even said when they were being interviewed, we watch the news. We see how this plays out.
Mm-hmm.
Why would we even play in those waters?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the better way to say it. It's strange because far be it for me to say, listen, if a person is black, they should be able to walk all over you. Absolutely not. Right. But maybe listen to what they're saying, you know, and if you can't reach an agreement, you don't go for the most extreme response, especially when that response has a drastic impact and the ripple effect goes well beyond the individual. And again, I think that a lot of times less melanated individuals are accustomed to calling the police just to deal with stuff that they don't want to deal with. And anything that is not going their way, it's like Karen energy. Well, if it's not going my way, I'm going to call the police. The police are here to serve my interest and represent me. And again, for black women, it's like, this is, why would you call the police on me? Do you want me to die?
Yeah, in instances where law enforcement should have nothing to do with the interaction.
It's two people handling a private issue.
You grabbed the shopping cart before I did, or vice versa.
You got the parking spot before me.
The police shouldn't be called here.
You know what I'm saying? And just, again, something to bear in mind, especially when you're dealing with black women. I think, though, above all else, if a black woman is that angry, black women, they've been through some stuff. It's probably best to just listen and then try to operate from that space. I think if you do that, everybody has a chance of ending up with better outcomes. Moving on, it's time for the Way Black History Fact. Today's Way Black History Fact is sponsored by the Black Information Network Daily Podcast. Check that out at binnews.com, where yours truly will be talking about some cool stuff, I'm sure. All right, today's Way Black History Fact, we're talking about Lunsford Richardson, who was born December 29th, 1854, and lived through August 21st, 1919. He was an American pharmacist from Selma, North Carolina, and the founder of Vick Chemical Company, which became Richardson Vicks Inc. Lunsford was born in 1854 on a farm near Selma, North Carolina. He attended Davidson College, where he graduated with the highest honors in Latin in 1875. He taught at the Little River Academy before he became a pharmacist. He married Mary Lynn Smith from Greensboro, North Carolina. In about 1884, they had two sons, H. Smith Richardson and Lunsford Richardson, and three daughters, Lorinda, Mary Ann, and Janet L. All right, now, already the story starts off dope because he's from South Carolina. He went to college, graduated with the highest honors in 1875, and then became a pharmacist. And this is a black man in the 1800s. So, shoot, man, I might have to.
He was a superhero. Let's state that plainly.
Okay.
You know, to have access to education at that point is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
To succeed, another. To graduate with top honors, right? Given recognition by people who would rather not.
Mm-hmm.
And then go on to get into medicine. He was a superhero.
Right. And I think that's important because there are some pockets of this country that really push back against black people celebrating black history. Like, what is the point? You know, white people invented a lot of cool stuff too. Absolutely. What? We're not taking anything away from anybody. I think that part of the reason why we celebrate black history is because it's not known. I think if you didn't know any better, you would just assume that Vicks was invented by some white folks in Germany or wherever, and that would be the end of the story. And it's because, you know, who writes the stories? So when we uncover something like this, it's important to shine a light on it. Like, hey, we were participating too, right? And then I'll add one more piece to that. When you are born in circumstances like these, like the circumstances that Lunsford Richardson was born into, and you manage to excel in something or contribute something to society, an invention or otherwise, that has had a lasting effect and shape the culture and the society that we live in a meaningful way. And you started with less, then the journey is more inspirational. So I think that the reason we celebrate Black history, the reason that we highlight Black achievements from the past, the reason that this specific show has a Way Black History fact built into it is because it's necessary so that we can appreciate the resolve that we have as a people, the tenacity that we have as a people. We share in these accomplishments, and we share our accomplishments. Even me and Q, we share our accomplishments.
Yes, indeed.
Man, what trademark, that trademark thing, we shared that with everybody. That's why we were talking about it on the news. For those that know, you know. For those that don't, we'll tell the story later. But I think that Black people have been very good at sharing things. And this is, you know, for folks that have a little trouble with this part of the show, there's a reason that we go so far back and we tell these stories. So let me continue. Lunsford bought a drugstore in Selma where he concocted and sold a menthol-laced ointment for croupy babies that he labeled Vicks in honor of Dr. Joshua W. Vick, his brother-in-law who helped him get established in business. Later, he sold the store in Selma and bought one in Greensboro. This was the Porter and Tate drugstore. Dr. Porter was the uncle of William Sidney Porter and the author known as O. Henry. In 1890, he took over the retail drug business of his brother-in-law, Dr. John Vick of Greensboro, North Carolina. After Dr. John Vick saw an ad for Vick's seeds, Lunsford Richardson began marketing Vick's family remedies. The basic ingredients of the range included castor oil, liniment, and deadshot vermifuge. That's a word that's new to me. All right. The most popular remedy was Cru and Pneumonia Salve, which was first compounded in 1891 in Greensboro. It was introduced in 1905 with the name Vick's Magic Cru Salve and rebranded as VapoRub in 1912 at the instigation of H. Smith Richardson, Lunsford's oldest son. Smith had gained valuable sales and marketing experience while working for a period in New York and Massachusetts after attending college. Smith Richardson assumed the presidency of the company in 1919 upon his father's death. In 1898, he sold his drugstore and formed Lunsford Richardson Wholesale Drug Company, one of only four wholesale drug companies in North Carolina. He sold the 21 Vicks products as well as the other drugs. In 1905, he sold the wholesale drug company and founded Vicks Family Remedies Companies, which became Richardson Merrill Incorporated and later Richardson Vicks Incorporated. Initially, Vick struggled to sell outside the Greensboro area until Lunsford's son, H. Smith, decided to concentrate only on the renamed VapoRub, the one unique and distinctive product of the 21. Lunsford was active in church activities as elder to First Presbyterian, an editorial in the Greensboro Daily News, August 22, 1919, said, quote, "He never passed anyone on the street, young or old, black or white, without a nod and a smile," unquote. He was particularly interested in the welfare of African Americans. During World War II, a Liberty ship was christened SS Lunsford Richardson at special request of the leading Negro citizens of North Carolina to honor the memory of a white friend. L. Richardson Memorial Hospital in Greensboro was renamed to honor him after his donations for a modernization program. It originally served the Black community. Lunsford became ill after a bout with pneumonia and died on August 21st, 1919. He was buried at Green Hill Cemetery in Greensboro, North Carolina. So, again, something that is incredibly profound, meaningful, and I think inspirational to know, again, what is, and you know, back then, because I had a little bit of context for it, back then these sort of like local drugstore remedies were pretty prevalent. But to have one such individual make something that is still being sold and used today, perhaps even now, because I know it's cold wherever you are.
You guys may have heard me coughing while we're recording this. I'm about to go use some Vicks VapoRub right now. Literally as soon as I get off this microphone.
So, yeah. So shout out to Lunsford Richardson. And yeah, what a great story for a Way Black History Fact. I love it. So, yeah. That'll do it. So if... So I guess I'd like to thank you all for tuning in to Civic Cypher once again. I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
I am Q Ward. He is Ramses Ja. Thank you guys again. We appreciate you.
Yes, indeed. Hit the website, civiccypher.com, and download any of our previous episodes. That's also where you can submit any questions, any topics you want us to cover, and donate, because the show grows with your donations. We've grown a lot and we will continue to grow, provided that you continue to support us. Be sure to follow us on all social media. We are at Civic Cypher on all platforms. You can find me personally at Ramses Ja. You can find Q at I Am Q Ward. And you can find the both of us on the cover of Hip Hop Weekly magazine this week. So check that out, all right?
Rumor has it.
And until next week, y'all.
Peace.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
KBOO's end-of-year drive is happening right now. We invite you to become a member today by going to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to the number 44321. Contribute now and help us meet our $70,000 goal by the end of the year. Join the KBOO family today at kboo.fm/give. KBOO.
I'm way, going up to Yorkshire, because you're in Yorkshire.